Coffee with Kenobi presents Resistance Reactions.
All pilots to your stations.
You ready?
Let's do this.
Kasuda, good luck on tomorrow's big race.
I don't need luck.
Here we go.
You can't handle the hype. Line them up.
Follow my signals.
Get ready to be impressed.
When it comes to your mission at the spot, I don't want anything to do with it.
The First Order is clearly making weapons.
We're going to need all the help we can get.
I want the station completely destroyed.
It's been too long since we've seen some action.
You showing up always means trouble.
And now, here are your hosts, Aaron Harris and David Motters.
Oh, this is exciting. I appear to be tingling all over.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Resistance Reactions. I am your host, one of the hosts at least, Aaron Harris, and joining me is my wingman, Dave Motters. David, how you doing?
Good, my friend, as always, ready to fly.
All right, so this week we got an episode called Secrets and Holograms we're going to be reviewing. We got to go over a few things from that episode, which was really cool. But we've had a lot of fun stuff going on this week. How was your week, David?
It was another good week. Busy. I just wanted to say thank you to you for being so flexible with recording at different times and with basketball games and ballet practices and all that. I appreciate that on your part. So I've been busy with that. Busy with family stuff, kids stuff. But, you know, as always, ready and excited to record with you. And how things been down there with you?
Well, pretty much the same. I think it goes with the time of year. So, but yeah, I've been doing all the same things you have. So it works out great that we can work around each other's schedules and get this done. So a lot of great stuff. Did you hear the news today about the new Thrawn book coming out next summer?
I did. Just looked at all that tonight on StarWars.com and read the little description of it. And so we got ourselves a trilogy, another Thrawn trilogy here.
Yes, we do. And for the record, we are recording this December 5th. And that news actually broke earlier today, December 5th, 2018. We're getting a new book by Timothy Zahn, Thrawn... was it Thrawn Treason?
Yep.
Yeah, Thrawn Treason, which the title there is just absolutely captivating. And the premise behind it, if you read the brief overview, is just nerve-wracking. I mean, it's great. It talks about Eli Vanto coming back and with news about his homeworld. Of course, we know at the end of the first Thrawn book, he goes off into the outer, into wild space to... their area to where Thrawn's from, and of course then it also talks about Thrawn having a decision that puts him at odds with the Emperor, and it looks really good. It's all supposedly taking place prior to the end of Rebels. From what I read, so
yeah,
it's looking like it's going to be an exciting summer. I mean, next year's great. I mean, we got episode 9 next year. We got the launch of the streaming platform, Disney Plus. We got the launch of Galaxy's Edge at Disney. We have Celebration, Chicago. And now we're getting Thrawn, a new Thrawn book.
Well, that doesn't even count some of the other books like Master and Apprentice coming out in March by Claudia Gray and some of the other stuff. But yeah, it's the year of Star Wars. I've seen on Twitter some people listing off some of these things, and it's just like, I don't know. I've always said, you know, I would spontaneously combust at some of these things, but next year, I don't know. A year from now, I don't know that I'll even be able to talk straight with everything coming out. I heard some people talking, Aaron, about maybe 6 months from now, you know, the first Galaxy's Edge will be open there in Anaheim. Yeah. And, you know, what? I guess you and I here in Florida would say, what, a year from now, maybe? Is November, December? This is December, but I'm guessing November, December when they said fall, and you know, I don't know how far things are behind or on time, but yeah.
It's Florida. Everything runs behind.
That's right.
No, yeah, it's supposed to be late 2019. So December is what I've been hearing. So, yeah. But either way, it's going to be great. It's going to be a packed year. Also, 2019, we get the first wave of Resistance action figures too. Spring of 2019. So that'll be fun. Got a good group of figures coming out. Little surprised that we're not getting Niku or Tam as a part of this wave. And the only ace that we're getting is Tora. So it'll be interesting to see, but we are getting Captain Pyre. We're getting Kaz, we're getting Jaeger, we're getting Bucket. There'll be a two-pack Jaeger and Bucket. Poe and BB-8. There'll be a Stormtrooper. There was somebody else. I thought. My mind is going blank. All right. But, yeah, great wave of action figures coming out next year as well. So, a lot of good things to look forward to in 2019. But right now we're still in 2018, and we have Secrets and Holograms, which we need to review tonight. So let's, David, go ahead and get that started. There we go. Secrets and Holograms, of course, originally aired December 2nd, which of course was this, for us, was this past Sunday. December 2nd, 2018, was written by Stephanie Folsom. David, what were your initial thoughts on that show?
Oh, a lot. I have a lot. Sometimes I feel like I have too many, my friend.
No such thing as that.
Oh, gosh. Talking Star Wars with you is not difficult. So, I four quick points. One is, as I'm watching this several times, it just seems like this particular episode is really the age that George Lucas made Star Wars for. This episode, I wrote down a few words to myself: adventure, fun, spying, sneaking around with your best bud. When Kaz and Tora Doza are sneaking around the Colossus platform, I just thought it was just good fun. And I was thinking again of my 8-year-old self seeing the original Star Wars, just like if I was watching this particular episode. I mean, you and I have talked about some super serious stuff already in this show. We didn't think it was going to happen, but we've covered genocide in this show, and we've also covered last week, what you and I talked about as being some of the heaviest stuff in terms of a loved one accidentally killing loved ones. And so this was kind of a nice little break, a little bit lighter fare, and but I just thought it's just so fun and good to see that. My second thought is all about Doza. I really do feel like we're being led in one direction with him, with the Imperial uniform and that stuff. But it really feels like it'll go another direction. You and I have talked about this in some of the first few episodes that we kind of thought it could be kind of that red herring and stuff. So that was very interesting to see some of the info come out on Doza. It was interesting to see the everyday people of the Colossus worried about their lives and their jobs, you know, with everything going on. And the ace pilots were worried, too. It was kind of interesting to see this whole swath of people worried about what Captain Doza's doing and how life's going to be out there. And the last little quick point I had was, I'm telling you, this show had such an 80s vibe to it. This is my jam. Starting with a video game that Tora is playing, it's just, you know, that cross between Asteroids and Dance Dance Revolution. But Asteroids, I played that as a kid in the 80s till my fingers fell off. Obviously, the Space Slug is from, you know, the 1980 Empire Strikes Back. And just such a 80s vibe in this episode. I just was like, they literally are taking me back in time. So that was a lot of fun for me to see as well, as a child of the 80s.
Dance Revolution. That's a reference I never thought I would hear in a Star Wars podcast.
Right. Well, it's in the, I didn't think I would make it either, but it was in the episode guide kind of explaining the game. I knew Asteroids. When I saw it, I immediately knew Asteroids. But then I should have looked it up before I got on with you. I thought Dance Dance Revolution would be more of a 90s, 2000 kind of video game.
Yeah, I think I thought it was. But yeah, no, that's pretty much exactly what it was. That's great. So yeah, no, I, you know, when, if you've listened to this show, or, and I haven't talked about it that much in this show, but if you've listened to Rebels Reactions for any time, you know, I have this hard, steadfast belief when it comes to these episodes, whether it was Rebels, whether it's now Resistance. And that's a very simple belief, that there is no, absolutely no such thing as a filler episode. I don't believe in filler episodes. I don't believe it. Everything ties in somehow and pushes a story in some way, one way or the other. And it can't just be written off as, you know, a side story. This episode, I could see a lot of people classifying as a filler episode because of how, different it was from some of the previous, the last couple of episodes. It just seemed to be an isolated adventure there. But it really has a lot going on that's going to tie into the overall story of this show. And of course, of the saga altogether. And it really goes and pushes a lot of the relationship between Kaz and Tora Doza. Which is, it was fun to watch them interact and have fun and go on their adventure. So yeah, this was, I did enjoy the episode. I got, there was some references in there that I thought were awesome, which we'll get into as we go. And you referred to some of them in your opening. There was a lot of things that happened that were great. Some of that I laughed at, some I was like, okay. There was even a reference, I didn't get it when I watched it, but somebody on Twitter posted it, and as soon as I saw it, I went, oh, of course. So yeah, a lot of great fun in the episode. It was real good. Four secrets and holograms. Basically, the storyline on this episode is First Order's coming to visit. Tora is pretty much locked in her room. Her dad, Captain Doza, doesn't want her in any danger or in harm's way. For some reason, it's almost like he's trying to hide her from the First Order, but we'll discuss that later. But they go through, she winds up escaping from her room and bumps into Kaz, who then, of course, they go throughout the Tower Room, through the Colossus as they explore, and then they find out the First Tora reveals First Order's coming, so they sneak back into the Tower. Kaz wants to get a hold of a deal that Doza's trying to work out with the First Order, with Captain Pyre, who's there, and of course all the nonsense and craziness ensues. So right off the bat, of course, we have we get a good look at the relationship between Tora Doza and her father, Captain Doza. Of course, we have, who obviously are very two different personalities, two very different people, as most fathers and daughters are. So very interesting, because she's an ace. She's definitely has skills. She's got personality galore, but he's obviously protecting her and still treating her as his daughter, as his little girl, and wanting to do everything he can to protect her. How did you feel about them opening up, exploring the relationship between Captain Doza and Tora?
Oh, it's good. We do need this character development. You and I do look at this in each episode. What are they pushing forward? When she comes into his office and does the whole flopping on the couch and, you know, the overacting and stuff like that, I like I just said a minute ago, I identify with this episode as an 8-year-old. I'm a big kid anyways, and so I would love this episode as an 8-year-old. As an adult, I'm dealing with this. You and I have talked, you know, I have a son who is a teenager, and my daughter is a preteen right now. And so this is, you know, I'm Captain Doza wanting my kids to be safe. And it's such a transition. Even Captain Doza talks about it. He's like, I want you to be safe. She says, I'm an ace pilot. And, you know, and he does allow that, which is a pretty dangerous role. it's always this challenge, right, as a parent to see our kids launch. Forgive the pun in this particular show. It literally is launching off of the Colossus. But it's a nice developmental thing to see. And as parents, you just walk this tightrope of what do you allow your son or daughter to do or not do. And of course, you're always so worried about your kids. And so I really enjoyed seeing this. it's me now. I'm you know, Captain Doza dealing with a child who wants to be an adult and wants to be entertained. So it's very fun to see.
Oh, it is a lot of fun to see. And definitely I'm in the same shoes you are with kids there. And I see a lot of similarities in how Tor is acting as to some of the reactions I get from my 11-year-old, almost aged her a year. So definitely I can see where that's coming from. I mean, but at some point we're seeing a strain in their relationship. She's getting bored. She's getting tired. She's getting bored. As most kids do when they're confined to their rooms, or to the house, they get bored, they get tired, they flop around. And we see that reflecting in her conversation as well. Is they're like, why is he being so secretive? And she's like, and when she's talking to the other Aces, Frey is like, why is he being so secretive? And we actually hear Griff talk for the first time in this. It's about time. We're, what, nine episodes in, and we finally get Griff Halloran to speak, voiced by the wonderful Stephen Stanton. So they're having that conversation, and you hear Tor go, you know, he doesn't even have time for me. So obviously his role as head of the Colossus is taking a toll on this relationship with his daughter, who he's trying to protect. What were your thoughts when it comes to Tora? She's obviously a lot younger than these other Aces, and her actions even reflect it, because once she's confronted by the Aces, she's like, you know what, let's get out of here, and they wind up leaving. There were other things that contributed to that, which we'll get into in a moment. But she says her piece. You know, she's obviously doesn't want to talk about her dad, because obviously it's a strained relationship. She's like, you know, yeah, he doesn't even have time for me, and they leave. What do you think is the status of that relationship there?
Well, like you said, it is strained. You know, just as you were saying all that, I'm really glad you brought this up, because number one, I think about Star Wars and the relationship with fathers and how that has been, you know, throughout the movies and the comics and books, you know, always this issue with father relationships. Really, really well done in Bloodline, as I mentioned last week. I'd finish that up and thinking about Leia's relationship with her biological father, and then, you know, her Leia Bail Organa. So in this case, you know, it's tough. I don't think you got to help me, Aaron. Are we given her age? I don't think we've ever been given the age of Tora Doza.
Not that I'm aware of. That I remember.
I don't either. If maybe we're wrong on that, maybe they've mentioned, but I don't think they have. The reason why I bring this up is because you and I think we've talked before, like, if here's where we'll bring our psychology minute in for a second. When we look at the development of children and adolescents, one of the things that's very challenging for parents is that we are waiting for the development of that child's frontal lobe. In all of our kids, the frontal lobe is the most sophisticated part of your brain. Unfortunately for us parents, it's the last to develop. Historically, Aaron, our frontal lobes finish developing at 18, 19, 20 years of age. Recent research, MRIs and functional MRIs have shown that the frontal lobes in our kids are not developing as fast as, say, that it did in you and me and in our parents, your parents, Aaron, and my parents. I'm not going to get into all the reasons why we think that that might be the case, but the reason I bring it up to tie it into Resistance and Tora Doza and her dad and to answer the question that you asked is that sometimes you can have moms and dads who, you know, they're very interested and they take the time to be with their child, but they're still not that fully developed frontal lobe, so they can't see things a full 360. And with that, you know, there's that famous saying, I've said it to a lot of the parents in my office, and the kids look at me and they kind of get this grumpy look on their face, and because they know I'm kind of giving them some grief. But I like to say this when, like, that son or daughter is 21 or 22, and I'm like, isn't it amazing how smart your parents got from the time you were 14 to 21? And of course, the point I'm making is no, mom and dad didn't change at all when you went from 14 to 21. Your brain finished developing. And so you could really see your parents in a full 360. So I bring all that up to say that, again, from a developmental perspective, Captain Doza could be working hard to spend time with her. Maybe at times he can't. But with a teenage brain, it's hard to please the teenage brain. And they don't see things fully or appreciate everything that parents have to do. And I, you know, you and I understand that, but it's tough for kids to get that. So what I'm saying is, I guess in a nutshell, is it can be strained just because of her age, even if he does a great job parenting.
Oh, absolutely. And to answer a question, I did find the answer. Taurus 15.
Ah, where did you find that?
The Star Wars databank at starwars.com.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, pull up her profile. It even says Tora has the combined energy of a hotshot ace and a 15-year-old.
Ah.
So she's 15.
Glad you did, because she's right there in the age range of a lot of kids I've worked with. And, of course, they look at me and they're like, you know, my parents are stupid and dumb and they don't know what they're talking about. I'm not saying, you know, Tora's not saying that in the episode, but you know, I've worked with thousands of kids, and the 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, you know, is, you know, two real big problems. Number one, I can never be hurt in a car accident. And number two, I know more than my parents. And of course, you know, both of those things are false.
Well, don't forget number three.
Uh-oh.
I'm Batman. Sorry, I couldn't help that one. Sorry.
Well, no. I mean, Star Trek. Now we're pulling Batman in. We're good. We're good.
Yeah, you know, we can do a little bit of everything around here. So
that's right.
So let's go ahead and move on a little bit from Doza and Tora, and we actually see the return of Jace Ruckland in this episode. Of course, Fuel for the Fire was his first appearance, voiced by the great Elijah Wood, Frodo Baggins himself. Ruckland is back, and he is waiting tables. He's bartending there in the Ace Lounge of the High Tower. And Kaz bumps into him when Tora takes him up there. And it was definitely not a good meeting. And Kaz is like, what are you doing here? And we find out that Jace is there because he's having to make extra money to rebuild his racer that he still blames Kaz for destroying. Which, of course, we all know Kaz had nothing to do with that. It was all Jace's fault for stealing the hyperfuel, but that was another contributing factor is why they left the lounge, as I mentioned earlier. Fun to see Jace Ruckland back in the episode. I knew as somebody we're going to have to start seeing recurringly as the show goes on, so it was great to see him in this episode. Thoughts on Ruckland's appearance?
Well, I'm very proud of us. I have to brag because we called this. I don't know. Some people would say, yeah, we saw that coming a mile away. But you and I did talk about it. It's kind of fun to see a prediction come true. We know that Kaz has to have some foils. And, oh, gosh, I just blocked on the name of the Alina that gives him all kinds of grief. But that guy will be back as well. But you got to have some foils. He's the perfect jerk kid, you know. Again, you know, blaming Kaz when he's the one who stuck the hyperfuel in there. Kaz is the one who jumps on his ship and saves Ruckland. But I loved Hype Faison yelling at him. That was funny.
Where's my bantha milk?
Exactly. That was awesome. And it's just fun to see Ruckland all shook by that. So it was. I got a kick out of seeing Jace Ruckland back in.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's what all he's wanted was to become an ace so he could get up in the tower, and now he's in the tower serving drinks, serving bantha milk. So
that's it.
So yeah, it was great because he actually played a bigger part in this besides just that initial bump in there. Sorry, my alarm went off. So plays an initial bigger part in the episode because he actually catches Kaz sneaking. Kaz winds up getting away from Tora for a moment, and he tries sneaking into Captain Doza's office to steal this data pad that 4D M1N, also known as admin in my book, dropped off in the office per Doza's instructions. This data pad had the agreement between the First Order and the Colossus for the protection, which we'll go into that deal a little bit here in a minute. And Kaz needed to get a hold of that so he could, you know, do his spying duties and get it back, the news back to the Resistance. So he breaks in there, and Brooklyn is coming around the corner as he's going in, so he sees him break into the office. So what's he do? He sees a way to get his revenge on Kaz, and he immediately takes off running after Captain Doza, who's on the landing pad seeing off the Captain Pyre and the First Order representatives as they're boarding their shuttle. He comes running up and says there's a problem, and tells him somebody broke into his office, so they go back and go in the office, and of course there's nobody there, and poor Rucklin is of course now humiliated.
Oh, I love it.
Kaz got him again.
Yeah.
So he played a pretty fun role in this episode. Kaz really unbeknownst really stuck it to him at a second time there. But we also, in this scene, we actually find something out really cool about Captain Doza, which is something that we kind of knew was coming at some point, and a lot of people suspected. So we find out he actually was a member of the Galactic Empire.
Yeah.
When Kaz goes to hide in a closet as those of them are coming back in, and there he ducks in the closet, and inside the closet is a freshly pressed Galactic Empire officer's uniform. Looks like he held the rank of captain in the Galactic Empire as well, based on those rank pins on the uniform. I don't know about you, David, but when I saw that, I was like, ooh, yes, I knew it. I almost felt justified. You're like, yeah, I knew it. Because it adds a lot of explanation to his personality, and it also adds some background into his almost distrust of the First Order. You figure somebody in the Galactic Empire knows all the dirty dark secrets, or a lot of the dirty dark secrets of the Empire, so he knows how they operated and how they treated people and so on and so forth. Especially if he was a captain, he was probably in on it, but we now see the First Order's rising, and he knows the kind of foil he's dealing with, which to me explains a lot of his hesitation in dealing with that, with them. Your thoughts?
Oh, definitely. You know, thinking about, you know, the new canon books, you know, since the Disney purchase, like I said, last session or last episode or the one before, I've tried to read a lot of them. I have not been able to get through everything. You and I both, we just it's so difficult with children. We have two each, and we're running in multiple directions, but I've tried to. And the reason why I bring that up is to say that, you know, not only have these books, you know, elucidated some facts and backstory on some of these major characters, but I felt like, you know, one thing that these books have done is given you a backdrop on Imperials, and clearly there's some who enjoy the power and control, and they want to use it to hurt others and be in power, and clearly they, in these books, they're also showing Imperials who are like, look, I joined for the right reasons, I wanted to help the galaxy, I wanted there to be order versus chaos, you know, and I do wonder if the ultimate story here on Doza is going to be he was that kind of person. He went into it for the right reasons, saw the things that were going on wrong, and then just like you said, again, to circle back to what you just mentioned, he's very hesitant about these guys because he can see that they're trying to emulate the Empire, and I think, you know, Doza has seen the problems with it. So I think you're right on track there.
No, absolutely. And I think this plays right along into the perception that they're writing into this, into these episodes of Doza. They're wanting you to think he's a collaborator. He's a bad guy in this. And that uniform plays right into it because everybody knows the Empire's evil.
Right.
And matter of fact, I mean, a perfect point of that is when I was driving home tonight from church with my daughter, who watches the episodes with me every week, we were talking about, and when she heard I was recording, she's like, oh, which, she was trying to remember which episode it was that we were going to be discussing. And she remembered, she's like, oh yeah, with the bad guy, and he's got the Empire uniform in his closet. I said, yeah, that's the episode. He goes, oh yeah, he's a bad guy. I'm like, are you sure? She's like, yeah, he is. He's got to be a bad guy. He was in the Empire. So, well, that doesn't necessarily make him a bad guy.
Right.
So
right.
Try to get him thinking there, but...
Yeah, well, I was, you know, consistent with your daughter, one of the things I was thinking about as I watched the episode and then I was watching again tonight before we got on was, like, why would he leave that in there? Why would you leave evidence of that around? But consistent with what you were just saying, I wonder if he took pride in what he did and felt like he did do good things, that he did some good things, not all bad. Like he tried to help some of the people under him, and he tried to help some different planets and things like that. So, I at first I thought, why? It's you don't want any remnants of that, but maybe there's a certain pride and maybe some really good things that he did.
Oh, no, absolutely. I'm sure he... It's in one of those situations where he's proud. He was proud of what he thought he was fighting the good fight. And you know, when you're fighting for family and for home, you always feel you're going to be fighting the good fight. And that's, I mean, we don't know anything about his Imperial career. Hopefully that's something that's explored and we find out more of at some point. But if his motivation was for family and friends, I mean, yeah, he's going to come out of the fight with his head up, proud of what he did, especially if he was involved in an engagement protecting his home planet and his family. So, yeah, there's very good possibility there could be some pride in his service. But then at the same point, why is he keeping it a secret? Because he keeps that door locked. He tells... when Rucklin tries to open, goes toward the door to open it to look for Kaz, he even tells him, no, that's off limits. You don't go in there. He was very, very stern with them about it before ushering him out of their office.
No, very good point. Yeah, it's kind of both things. You know, is he proud of it? But also, like you said, they're showing, oh, he doesn't want anybody to see it. And you're like, well, why? So keeping it ambiguous right now.
Yeah, yeah. very much. And I think that's playing into a lot of the perception of Doza with the watchers and our listeners, because definitely he's a very complex individual, and I'm enjoying seeing how he's being written in these episodes. So looking at this episode, of course, a couple other things we want to look at. There was a nice little nod, which I did not catch when I initially watched the episode. Our good friend John Maria over at the Wookiee Gunner, she posted the picture that she had found that somebody had posted on Reddit of this rock that Tora Pitt finds in the market when she's going through the market with Taz. Not the Tasmanian devil. Taz. Kazuda. She is with Kaz and finds this rock, and she's admiring it, asks him how much, and of course the price triples when the guy turns around and realizes it's Toradoza. But the rock in and of itself was, you know, when I saw it, I'm like, oh man, that looks familiar, but I just kind of wrote it off. But apparently it is the same type of rock that Zeb and Kallus used for light when they fell into the underground cavern in The Honorable Ones back in Star Wars Rebels season. Was that season two, wasn't it?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, season two. Because it was after I took over, yeah. So season two. So, yeah. So it was a nice nod to Star Wars Rebels there. Caught me off guard when I saw her post, Jonna Maria's post. I'm like, oh my goodness, that's right.
That was cool. I know this is why Star Wars fans are the best. They have got eagle eyes.
Oh, absolutely. They do. They have great eyes. They catch stuff, and there's so many of us out there. There's nothing that we can't catch. And the fact that they would put something small like this in there, just as a nod to the other. To another show is awesome. I absolutely loved it. I mean, we've had other nods with the decorations in Tora's room is a nod to Episode One. It's a nod to Return of the Jedi, Empire Strikes Back. We got all the stuffed animals and posters and everything. That's a nod to everything that she has going on. But then we have just a simple rock like this going back to probably one of the most pivotal episodes of Rebels. That's when Callus learned that, hey, you know what? Maybe I'm not on the winning side here.
Right, right.
Maybe there is more out there than my Imperial uniform. Because he sees how Zeb was treated when he was rescued by the Ghost crew. Then he sees how he's treated as the Empire picks him up. And how they're like, oh, you're back. Nobody realized he was... realized he had returned and was rescued. So yeah, definitely a difference there, and it was a nice nod because definitely it makes a difference. And we're seeing, which I enjoyed, because we begin to see Tora begin to question Kaz, and we'll go into that right after this break. All right, welcome back, everybody. We're here discussing Secrets and Holograms. We're going to continue that discussion right now. As I said before the break, Tora is beginning to suspect there's more to Kaz than meets the eye. Of course, as we mentioned, they were running around the station because Tora got bored being locked up in her room. And at one point, she winds up rescuing him from one of the situations he was in. She finds him in the dad's office. He's like, why were you in my dad's office? And she begins to question him. Are you a spy? And he's like, me, a spy? And he's laughing and everything. Oh, I'm a pilot. And it even ends with her just standing there after he walks off. And she's like, who are you, Kazuda? And I love that line as it ends, because it lets you know that she's got the wheels are turning in her head. She knows something's up.
Yeah, just like her dad couple episodes ago when he says, who are you? And here's his daughter saying, asking the same question. I thought there was a nice parallel there.
Oh, it definitely was. It was very nice. I'm glad they did that. After exploring how far apart they've drifted at the beginning, this actually shows how much they're alike. Remember at the end of one of the previous episodes, and my mind just went blank on which one it was, it ends with Captain Doza sitting there looking at a security camera shot of Kaz going, who are you, as it goes off. And in this one we have Kaz, Tora Doza, standing there going, who are you, Kaz Suda? And it just definitely just ties all in together, and again showing how much they're her and her dad are alike. But while they're running around the Colossus and they're trying to make their escape and avoid all the security droids and everything, they wind up going down the garbage chute. never seen that in Star Wars before, have we? Down the garbage chute, flyboy. That would have just been perfect if she'd have said that.
All right. Well, in The Force Awakens, too, when Finn asks, Han, does this place have a trash compactor? Oh, yeah. But yes, a lot of trash compactors. This is more than a trash compactor.
Oh, it's not even a compactor. It's an incinerator.
Yes.
And when they get down there, in which I find quite, just to add to the humor of it, they get down there, and she's like, it's an incinerator. He's like, an incinerator? She's like, oh, it's fine as long as it's the second day of the third cycle. Or as long as it's not the third day of the... Or it's just the second day of the third cycle. He's like, no, it's the third day. And she goes, oh, we're in trouble. And then all of a sudden you see all the machines start moving and the lasers start firing, incinerating all the trash and everything. I tell you this, I was just waiting for some Dianogas to pop up.
Oh, exactly. I'll tell you another thing, talking about, you know, Dianogas in episode 4, I was thinking about episode 5 as I was watching this clip, because when, you know, the things are shooting lasers, but then those big claws would come down and smash in front of BB-8, in front of, you know, Tora and Kaz. And the thing I thought about was that big thing that went down in Cloud City and pulled Han out of, you know, in the big block of carbonite, you know, almost the same type of claw. And so again, you know, in my mind, all these 80s references. That was pretty cool, that incinerator area.
So you got me thinking now, with all these 80 references in this episode, are we saying that the Aces are the Breakfast Club?
They could be.
Now, would that make Team Fireball the Goonies?
You know what's funny? Here's what would be a total, piggybacking off what you said, if, what is it, Brad Allman? Is that his name? Brandon Allman. If he ends up at some future point in seasons 2, 3, or 4, or however far it goes, and he reveals that they were modeled on that kind of stuff from the 80s, I would, because when you look at his age, he looks like he was from the 80s. I could be completely wrong, but that would be funny. We're, you know what? We've predicted a lot of stuff. I don't know. I got a good feeling about this.
Either way, it's going to be fun to see how it plays out. So, but yeah, they're stuck in the incinerator. The machines are going. The claws are grabbing. Which dead on. I never made the connection with the claws resembling that grab from Empires. Going back and replaying it in my head. Yeah, they're pretty much exactly the same.
Yeah, the same really. Shape. Yeah,
same shape and everything, in the way they operated. So we have them running through trying to escape, and I thought it was really funny too, of course, when Ruckland then dumps garbage down the chute and it comes out and hits Kaz. He gets Kaz back without even realizing it.
Right. And the thing gets blasted immediately.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he gets blasted immediately because it's being incinerated. And BB-8's trying to avoid getting incinerated, and he's rolling over trying to get to the door to unlock it, and of course he gets there, he unlocks it, the door's opening, all of a sudden a shot rings out and he gets knocked away and the door closes. Just a lot of fun going, a lot of fun in this scene, a lot of excitement in this scene too, because everybody, you're on the edge of your seat. Are they going to get burned? Are they not? Are they going to get incinerated? But you know they're not. it's the star of the show, and
right,
one of the big major co-stars, you know they're not going to get incinerated. But at the same point, you know, it's a little fun watching them run for their lives. So they wind up escaping, and I did, this is probably one of the scenes I enjoyed the most in this episode, because it reminded me so much of the compactor scene in A New Hope. And of course, A New Hope is my favorite of the movies. Because just from the nostalgia point of view, it's the first one I ever saw. So I really connected with that scene when it comes to the compactor and the incinerator there. I had a lot of fun. I mean, like I said, the only thing that would have made it better is when they first jumped in, when she first got in there and Kaz is looking at it, and if she just said, into the garbage chute, flyboy, that would have just made it even better, especially with him being a pilot. So
That's right.
So the only other thing I want to touch on in this episode, of course, is the deal with the First Order. Of course, Captain Doza has not signed the deal. He did not sign a deal, wanted time to read it over, and Pyre told him he needed to hurry. But we have some minor details here. Not a lot of details, but we did get some minor details. We know the First Order is promising to help take care of the pirate situation, which the pirate raids. And unfortunately, as a result of that, would wind up with a garrison of troops patrolling the Colossus, of First Order troops, stormtroopers. They wouldn't give a... Captain Doze asked how many, Captain Pyre wouldn't answer that, couldn't or wouldn't answer that. And then he asked for how long, and Pyre was like, you really can't put a time frame on these things. So we're looking at a deal that's going to station First Order troops on the Colossus for an indeterminate amount of time, which in other words, that means they ain't going to leave.
Yeah, right. And Doze knows that. He knows it.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he worked out a couple deals like that as an Imperial. Station troops there to help you out for security, and they'll be there for an indeterminate amount of time. In other words, you've been occupied.
That's right.
So, yeah, interesting proposition. Well, as you can see how that plays out. Doze is beginning to show signs of being a man against the wall there. Got his back against the wall, looking out for the best for his daughter and the Colossus, but at the same time not wanting to really deal with the First Order. Which brings me to this question. If he's needing help and he doesn't want to deal with the First Order, why hasn't he contacted the Republic?
Right, exactly. Well, you and I, in that first episode, right, or was it The Recruit or the next one, Triple Dark, where he is talking to them, and I think it was Major Von Reich who says to him, we know a lot of cheating deals, right?
Yeah, black market dealings, yep.
Yeah, and so and Von Reich specifically mentions that, you know, we would be more than happy to tell the New Republic about those. And so maybe that's the hesitation to not contact the New Republic about it. So again, rock and a hard place, right? Mm-hmm. You know, he's in a bad spot himself. And probably he's had to make some of those, again, dealings to, you know, sustain the Colossus. That's why, you know, in my opening remarks, you know, I thought an interesting thing was, is you can see the worry of the citizens, almost like, you know, like a mayor or a governor or a president, when you have to think about a lot of people. And in this case, the episode shows the aces are worried about what Doze is doing, and people all around the Colossus, right? That's why they showed that scene in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. A lot of pressure on him to keep this whole way of life going. I'm guessing he's been willing to make some deals to keep it going.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't know, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. And I'm sure we will have a lot to discuss about this in the future there. So, but with that, we'll wrap up our discussion of Secrets and Holograms. David, final thoughts on this episode?
Yeah, it really struck me as you and I were talking here that I really, you know, you'd mentioned the development of the relationship of not only Tora and her dad, but also Kaz and Tora. And I just really got this feeling, I've mentioned it before, that we're really going to see Kaz and Tora flying together at some point, you know, as aces. You and I were talking about the show that would be mind-blowing, you know, to have Marcus come back and really help out Yeager, you know, and see Yeager up there flying with him. So it's just some kind of epic space battle. So that would be cool to see. But I would really look forward to seeing Kaz flying with Tora. Just as we were mentioning, I think, you know, one of my final thoughts is, you know, where will the story with Doze go? And I really like what you mentioned, you know, maybe 10, 15 minutes ago, which is, you know, is the motivation, you know, for family and friends when he was in the Empire. And I'm hoping it was the case it was. And, of course, I want him to be a bad guy. I'm a softie, so I hope he's a good guy. And then just the last little point, final thoughts, was it was really again, fun for me on a number of levels. One, being a dad and seeing the father-daughter interaction and the 80s vibe in this show. when you do Asteroids or if you know, if Space Invaders was involved or anything like that, these are the games I played back in the 80s. So so real fun for me to see this episode. Real fun and enjoyable. A lot of Empire Strikes Back references, too, so can't beat that.
No, absolutely. It was a great episode. I did enjoy it. It was a lot of fun references throughout the episode. I loved how they explored the relationship between between Tora and Captain Doza. It was a lot of fun seeing Kaz and Tora's relationship grow as they get to know each other better, as they go through exploring Colossus and fighting an incinerator to survive. It's always great to see First Order back. I'm really enjoying seeing and learning more about the First Order than just what we've seen in the couple movies that we've had so far. And overall, I really enjoyed it. It was a fun, simple episode. Enjoyable. It had its laughs. And it was a great way to, it was just an all around great episode, as simple as that. So grading the episode, of course, as you know, everybody, we grade each episode as we go. We basically on a school scale with an A, B, C, D, or F. As much as I enjoy this and all the fun references that were in there, I'm gonna have to give this one a B. It was good, but I felt like it could have done more when it came to the meeting between Pyre and Doza. I would have liked to have seen more of Kaz and Tora roaming around. Bonus points for bringing in Rucklin and seeing him again, but I would have to go with a B on this one. David, how about you?
Yeah, you know, last week, you know, we really, really gushed about the episode, and I still feel the same way. I haven't changed my mind at all. That was a solid A because of everything they covered in that. And of course, we talked about the Platform Classic and the three phases of that race and how awesome it was. So again, this one, I thought anything that followed that it's gonna be tough, no matter how good the episode is. And so I definitely went with a B as well. Although the OP Pit sighting in this episode can, you know, sometimes that can boost it, but the OP Pit sighting was very, very small. If it was more, I would have to probably go with a B+, but since it was minimal, we've got to go with a B. So I'm a same grade as you.
Yeah, so we did get our unofficial mascot some screen time. We got some OP Pit in there, which was definitely a lot of fun. Great things. I will say this, I was disappointed. We have no Niku moment. He didn't say a word. Matter of fact, he didn't even show up on the screen. So yeah, no Niku. But we do have David's Creature Corner. David, take it away.
Absolutely, my friend. I think everyone saw this creature at the very beginning. It's Tora's pet. It looks like it's spelled Bugles, but she pronounces it Buggles, right? Buggles. Almost like an ant.
I kept thinking she said Bubbles, too, until I actually had to look it up.
I thought it was, yes, B, Bubbles. But yeah, Buggles. And even 4D says it, even after Buggles pees apparently purple urine on the floor. So that was quite disgusting. But I thought it was kind of neat because here is a new creature. Every episode has given us something new. Her pet is a Vorpak. And Bucket's List, who, you know, obviously I read that every week and watch the little video as well, says that Vorpaks were originally designed as eight-legged creatures. And so kind of they were saying that it's probably a special breed that Tora has. So there's a brand new creature. Now, you know, something to think about. Last week we mentioned there's three, at least, that we don't know. And I've called them, you know, Purple Guy, he's Orthog. I mentioned Green Guy and Beast. in the last episode. Well, remember you had mentioned the Rebels reference with that rock. Well, right during that scene, we get a new creature, the antiques dealer. We don't know what he is. He kind of initially made me think of a Doug, like who's the Sleemo in episode one? The racer, the pod racer.
My mind just went blank on it.
I just was watching it. Oh gosh, it'll come to me when I don't think about it. But he looked, you know, the antiques dealer was looking like a Doug, but I think he's standing up. So we've added a third. We have four at least unnamed creatures. The antiques dealer, we see Beast again right there when we see Tora talking to the antiques dealer. But we see the Thielen, name is Jukes, and we also see that the Nautilin, they've named the Nautilin in this one, and the Nautilin's name is Namua, N-A-M-U-A. But you see Beast, we've got Green Guy, we've got the antiques dealer, and who's the other one that we don't know? Let's see. Beginning and end. Yeah, so we've got one, two, three, I guess, still, right? Because we found out we don't know what Orthog is. So we have four.
We have four that we don't know.
So 29 plus four. So really we have 33, but right now it stands at 29. We had 28 last week. They let us know. I was really hoping when I saw this episode that Bucket's List would really tell us what Buggles was, and they did, a Vorpak. So every week we've had a new sighting. Also, really, really tiny little thing. Remember I'd mentioned if something is not animated or moving around, we don't really mention it. But I had mentioned on a previous episode that they didn't show the other side of Tora's room.
Mm-hmm.
In the Bucket's List, they have a little reference. They say you can now see a Tauntaun and a Puffer Pig in her room. I watched the episode, and it's very hard to see them, you know, in her room. But again, kind of need to see more creatures, the Tauntaun and the Puffer Pig and stuff like that. So, it'll be interesting to see what they have coming up here. Maybe in this next episode, you and I were talking about the clip they just released today. Not sure if they'll show another creature, but we've lucked out so far with my creature corner. There's been something new every episode. So there you go.
There we go. That there is. And, of course, we were talking about Sebulba, Doug from the Phantom Menace there. Sebulba. Is the name we couldn't think of. Perfect, great creature corner there, an alien corner. So let's go ahead and check out our emails and see what you, our listeners, thought of this episode, Secrets and Holograms. Our first email is from a good friend, longtime listener of Rebels Reactions. Chris Case wrote in.
Oh, excellent. I was hoping he would write in.
Yep, Chris wrote in. He says, "Hey, guys, not sure if I'm too late or just in time." You were right in time. "But I wanted to get my thoughts in on the latest episode of Resistance. I have finally caught up with both the show and the podcast, and I must admit, I was one of those that was skeptical but hopeful of this show. When I finally sat down and watched 2 weeks ago, I was glad at what I saw and couldn't stop watching. Every show has been above average or better, and I'm loving the characters and their development. As for the most recent episode, I would have to say that this fun spy-style episode has..." Excuse me. Let me start that over again. "As for the most recent episode, I would have to say that it was a fun spy-style episode, as if Bond met Mr. Bean." I believe that movie was called Johnny English, if I remember correctly. Anyway, so that was a side note. "I was glad to see Kaz and Tora become better friends, and glad to see the feud between Jace Rucklin and Kaz still alive and well. It was awesome to think that Dozo was an Imperial defector who has seen what someone like Pyre can do when he needs to. This brings up so many questions about Doza and makes me wonder why he would even think of making a deal with the First Order. I'm sure your regular writer, Tarkanis, will not have anything nice to say about him. Well, I think I've gone on too much, but look forward to hearing your thoughts, and it's great to have you guys back. May the Force be with you. Well, Chris, thanks for writing in. Imperial Defector, that's something we didn't discuss. Maybe he did not. Maybe he's keeping it hidden because he, at the fall of the Empire, instead of continuing to fight, he ran. He defected. He went into hiding. Wow. That's a good call. Good call, Chris. I like that. Very good. Thoughts, David?
Yeah, I love that. Like I said, there's a lot of options open for Doza's story. And, you know, I trust the writers and Justin Ridge to really play this out really well. That would be a fun angle, like Chris said, for that to happen. It would be consistent, I guess, with what we were talking about, him, you know, wanting to do the right thing. Not, you know, prior to the Empire falling, being fearful of leaving and tracked down and killed. But when it was falling apart, he knew it was time to leave. He knew they were wrong and did wrong things, bad things. That's what I'm hoping for. So, but I'm glad Chris is watching the show and wrote in. That's so cool. I was hoping he would. I knew he would.
Oh, absolutely. I'm glad he did. I'm glad he caught up and is enjoying it as much as we are. So our next message, of course, is from our regular Cameron Ramos. Yeah. And Cameron says, what a great episode of Resistance. After the first time we met Doza, I called that he was going to be somehow connected to the Empire. It was crazy to see his Imperial uniform hanging up in his closet. I was bragging to all my friends that I called it, but then one of them made a great point to me. What if Doza was really a spy for the Rebellion, and this was just an old Imperial uniform that he used to get inside the Empire and pass along info to the Rebels?
So Cameron's like, oh, crap.
I think... we'll address that in a minute. I got to finish this email. I think it would be really cool, a really cool plot twist, and wonder if Doza was really a former Rebel, and it would make sense why Yeager is his go-to person. Yeager himself said that there were other spies on the Colossus. What do you think? Can't wait for this week's podcast. Okay.
Well, I mean, I love it. Chris had one theory. Now Cameron's friends got another. So you know what? These episodes are doing exactly what you'd hope. It gets us talking and just really having fun.
Oh, absolutely. That's what makes these shows great, is all the different theories that are out there. That's a very interesting theory with him actually being a rebel spy from back in the day. I'll tell you, that's quite an infiltration if he did, making it all the way up to captain being an Imperial spy. Having somebody that high up in the organization would definitely make a difference. He could have been another one of the fulcrums.
All right.
So, because we know that was a broad term used to describe their spies. So he could have been a fulcrum agent. We don't know. That's a very interesting theory. Man, Cameron, you got me thinking now, man. I'm going to be digging into that one, racking my brain for the next couple of days on that. Definitely interesting, and it would explain why him and Yeager get along so well if they were both on the same side.
That really does. That really makes sense.
It does. It's got some explaining.
Yeah.
Got some explaining. All right. So, two more emails. First one here says, "It is me, Corporal Flux, writing in again. As you can see in the latest episode of Resistance, the lack of respect for the First Order has been dealt with. I said two episodes ago I wanted to see Commander Pyre to demand more respect. Well, in this episode, he did. He told Doza he needs to get on the ball and make a decision. I'm not fully pleased with Lucasfilm and Disney at this point, but I will not use a dreadnought on them. I appreciate that since I'm like really close to them. That is very nice. That's very nice on my part. Yes, yes, it is. You, you and Aaron better stay out of, stay in line as well. Out. I think he addressed this one to you, David.
Well, yes. yeah, I think he's hitting us up here. I got that direct message from him. Yeah, telling you and me to stay in line. I think he might use a dreadnought on us in our podcast if we don't keep it on the straight and narrow here. But he was a little bit more pleased. He was upset, if you remember last week, because there was no First Order stuff, no pyre and any of that. So a little reprieve here. We're not going to get orbital bombardment like we saw at the beginning of The Last Jedi. So a little bit of relief. We're okay for now. But
That's very nice. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
the next email here, of course, is the one that Chris was waiting for. It is me, Willard Tarkanis. I have been looking at potential recruits to join Tarkin's Empire, Sonara San, Marcus Speedstar, to name a few. But now it looks like I need to do some digging to see what this Doza character is all about. Imperial uniform.
Oh, so even Tarkanis, like Chris Case and Cameron Ramos, is wondering what's going on.
Yeah, so, we'll have to see what we dig up. So, that concludes all of our emails. Definitely, we appreciate everybody writing it and sharing your thoughts and opinions on this episode. You can always share your thoughts and opinions anytime by just giving us either a direct message, either on our Twitter, which is at Resist Reactions, or on Facebook, just search for Resistance Reactions. Or, of course, you can email us at resistancereactions@coffeewithkenobi.com. We definitely want to hear from you, whether it's just thoughts on the current episode or thoughts on how the series is doing overall. Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. If somebody wants to continue discussing Star Wars Resistance with you, David, what would be the best way to do that?
Absolutely. And just like you said, I very much want people to tweet at me, and now we've got four characters that we don't know their species, so definitely tweet at me, let me know. Tweet at me at David_Motters on Twitter, or email me real simple at dmotters@coffeewithkenobi.com.
There we go, perfect. And of course, you can do the same for me. Best way to talk Star Wars with me is just to hit up Twitter. You can find me at TAHarris121079, or of course, email me aharris@coffeewithkenobi.com. If you're looking for the latest in Star Wars news and Star Wars fun stuff to do between episodes, don't forget to go to coffeewithkenobi.com. You'll find all the latest in Star Wars news and some of the best blogs out there. They're on our website, coffeewithkenobi.com. If you're wanting stuff to listen to, check out our family of podcasts. We have, of course, the flagship show, Coffee with Kenobi, hosted by Dan Z. Of course, they discuss all the latest news and have a topic discussion each episode, which have been really fun. If you go back to the last six or so episodes, they've been discussing the top five things that they like about each of the movies so far. Then, of course, we have Comics with Kenobi. If you enjoy reading comics and you want to, or if you don't enjoy reading comics and you just want to stay up to date on the latest canon coming out of the Marvel comics, or even the Star Wars Adventure comics, hit up Comics with Kenobi. Matt and Jeff do a phenomenal job there. They will make you fall in love with comics, whether you want to or not. Trust me, I'm not just a pitch man. I'm also a client. Also, check out Lattes with Leo with Amy and Andrea. Great discussion, topic discussion, covering all things Star Wars. and they have awesome perspectives from their backgrounds there. Then, of course, if you like reading books and you enjoyed the old expanded universe there, check out Legends Library with Randy and Luke. They do a great job going back and reviewing those hundreds of books that were released before the Disney purchase that are now a part of the Legends line. So definitely check out all of our sister shows. Give them a follow. Give them a like. And you will not regret it. It's a lot of fun. David, thank you so much for running again with us and flying around the Resistance Galaxy. It's fun as always.
Absolutely, buddy. Always enjoyable.
Absolutely. We will be back next time as we review the next episode of Star Wars Resistance, Station Theta Black. You can check out the still releases and, of course, the video preview on our Twitter page and our Facebook page. I've posted them there, so check that out. Until then, remember, this is the Resistance podcast you're looking for.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along. Move along.